failed to start promptly without wasting much time, hoping that other members will join the stream while we are flowing. I welcome everybody present this morning, my colleague co-chair. There might be some apologies made to register the apologies from both parliamentary committees. From the side of the Select Committee, we have two apologies. We have Honorable Member Freddie Adams and Honorable Member Crumbock. They are unable to join us. Hoping our members will be joining us as we move on. We might also hear if there are any apologies from the side of the Portfolio Committee. That is fine, but in any way at the end of the briefing, obviously both committees will be needing members to pray, otherwise you will have facing some difficulty. Members will come, if not so, alternate members have to be called. But we are not going to waste much time then to move on. We welcome you all, we welcome other stakeholders having interest in this briefing. Our staff present here, you are also happy to be welcome. We welcome the department. I believe Dr. Maekisa will be leading this briefing. The two parliamentary committees agreed that we hold a joint meeting today so that we do justice to this convention. Without wasting a lot of time, I think
starting from the left, Ms. Sandisiwe Mtoninji, who handles our stakeholder liaison. Next to her, is Sasa Bia. He is in the wealth management and research section, and Monde Mayekiso, and to my right, representing our international relations section, is Shabane Mukul. We would like to talk to you this morning about what is called the Southeast Atlantic Fisheries Organization, which we abbreviate as SEAFO. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, we would like to illustrate where the waters we are talking about are. Note that the waters we're talking about are definitely outside what is called the territorial waters or the EEZ of the coastal states. The coastal states being Angola, being Namibia, being South Africa, as well as the United Kingdom. United Kingdom on behalf of inhabitants of Ascension and St. Helena Islands. So we have four coastal states, the UK on behalf of those islands, Angola, Namibia, and South Africa. But Chair, I do want to stress the fact that the waters we're going to be talking about here are outside the EEZ of these countries. a brief background to how we manage fish stock in the high seas. Historically, we've had open access. In other words, historically, if you wanted to go and fish in next to Mozambique, you were free to do that. If you wanted to go and fish next to France or Canada, you could do that. At the time, nations spoke of freedom of the seas. Seas were free to be used by anybody, wherever. Of course, this led to difficulty of over-exploitation. And the international community passed what was called the United Nations Convention of the Law of the Sea. This came into effect on the 10th of December of 1982. Now, this convention is called UNCLOS. Now, UNCLOS is the framework that is used internationally in order to manage fish stocks. That is in fact not entirely correct. UNCLOS is the framework for management of oceans. Whether it is the seabird and whether it is the fish stock. So our statement is not entirely correct. And the relevant article we have reproduced, Chair. Article 62 of UNCLOS states that the coastal states shall promote the objective of optimum utilization of living resources in the exclusive economic zone. So the according to the law of the sea, each coastal state has what we call sovereignty, or in its 200 mile zone. Chair, I need to hurry to indicate the difference between the 12 mile zone and the 20 and the 200 mile zone. 12 mile zone is territorial water. So in our case, if you move from shore out 12 kilometers, that is South African water, which we can and need to defend. However, moving out from 12 miles to 200 miles is our economic zone, where we have got exclusive use for in terms of resource use. However, other people can have the right of passage within that zone. Next. Article 63 says, where the same dock or stock or associated species occur within the exclusive economic zone of two or more states, these states shall seek, either directly or through appropriate sub-regional or regional organizations, to agree upon the measures necessary to coordinate and ensure the conservation and development of such stocks. I can give an example, Chair, of our hake. Hake occurs both in the EEZ of South Africa as well as the EEZ of Namibia. So on the basis of Article 63, the states could seek directly or through appropriate sub-regional and regional organizations to agree on measures of management of this resource. Chair, we'll come back to this concept. Now, those animals or fish that occur in waters of two countries, or in waters of two countries as well as in water in high seas, we call those stocks threatening stocks. In other words, they are not found within any one EEZ. They are found in an EEZ of more than one country, we call those threatening stocks. Another important article, Chairs, is Article 64. According to Article 64, the coastal states and other states whose national fish in the region for highly migratory species shall cooperate directly or through appropriate international organizations with a view to ensuring conservation and promoting the objective of optimum utilization of plant species throughout the region. Here comes a sensitive one. This would happen both within and beyond the exclusive economic zone. Chair, I do want to emphasize this, that the coastal state and state that has an interest in catching the fish would now have joint control in terms of management of these species, whether they occur within the 200 mile zone or outside the 200 mile zone. Article 64 continues. In regions for which no appropriate international organization exists, the coastal states and other states whose nationals harvest these species in the region shall cooperate to establish such an organization and participate in its work. What we have done, Chair, is to construct a diagram which illustrates this concept of straddling stocks, and we illustrate it here by saying, you know, the fish can swim freely between South African waters and Namibian waters, or between Namibian waters and Angolan waters. So we're illustrating what straddling stock is. But we also show that there are animals that are found outside EEZ with the dotted lines depicting the EEZ. We show that there are animals that are found outside the EEZ. Those also are said to be straddling if they do sometimes get into the EEZ. If they sometimes get into the EEZ, then we will say they are straddling stocks. But they may also be migratories if they are not residents in the Namibian, South African, or Angolan water. To give you a flavor, Chairs, of what animals we're talking about, these are all or mostly deep water species, Patagonian toothfish, Alfonsino, orange ruffy, hammerhead, crab, cardinal fish, horse mackerel, Oreo dories, deep sea hake, and as well as octopus and squid. Those would be the straddling stocks, or those would be the animals that are found either in South African, Namibian, or outside those waters, but within the Yaho region. As we indicated earlier, Chairs, UNCLOS, or the Law of the Sea framework, was adequate for management of EEZ. And again, Chair, if one goes back into the history, one would recall that when management of the fisheries was very poor without the Law of the Sea, nations started unilaterally declaring their EEZ. If I'm not mistaken, South Africa declared this EEZ around 1977, and yet the law officially came into effect in 1982. So the Law of the Sea then, eventually in 1982, provided an adequate framework for management of fish within the EEZ. However, we soon discovered that it was not effective in the management of straddling and migratory fish stocks. So the international community met again between 1982 and 1995 to hammer out yet another agreement. In 1995, they concluded the agreement for the implementation of the provisions of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea of 10 December 1982, relating to the conservation of traveling fish stocks and highly migratory fish stocks. That was in 1995. So it took them 13 years to get agreement. What this agreement calls for, Chair, is that regional organizations will have to be created. And these regional organizations, which are called Regional Fisheries Management Organizations, which we abbreviate as RFMOs, would then serve as the appropriate structure. At the moment, Chair, there's a mistake again in the last bullet. There are 17 RFMOs instead of 13. There are 17 RFMOs in existence, and CFO is one of them. So it's one of 17 regional fisheries management organizations. Chairs, you could ask what it is that the international community is trying to do. The international community is trying to make sure there is management of fish resources, even in the high seas. So the freedom of the high seas that we've had historically is being curtailed by saying those countries that are along the coast in that particular area, together with those countries that have an interest in fishing in that area, have got to come together and hammer out an agreement and form a regional fisheries organization which will be responsible for management. The ones labeled in blue, Chair, are the existing RFMOs, or regional fisheries organizations. The purple or pink are those that are still being negotiated. South Africa at the moment participates in the bottom one, CAMELA, which is Council for the Conservation of Antarctica Marine Living Resources. So we do participate in that one. We do participate in the one labeled ICAC, International Council for Conservation of Atlantic Tuna, and so on and so on and so on. But there is no regional fisheries organization in the Southwest Atlantic. And the one that is then, there is one actually, let me say there isn't one. There is one called CIAFO, which is the Southeast Atlantic Fisheries Organization. Pacific one, those would be the... I said it's in the Atlantic. Atlantic, those would be the CPPF and so on. My colleague is going to check, Honorable Chalmers. Functional ones would be the blue ones. The blue ones would be the functional ones. The others are at various stages of development. Next. What then are the objectives of the Southeast Atlantic Fisheries Organization? Its objective is to ensure the long-term conservation and sustainable use of the fishery resources on the high seas. I think we should have underlined that. On the high seas, other than highly migratory stocks. So we exclude the tuna. Other than the highly migratory stock found in the Southeast Atlantic, again, no chairs beyond the limits of national jurisdiction, taking into account other living marine resources and so on and so on. So CIAFO doesn't, as I indicated at the beginning, doesn't apply to the EEZ of either South Africa, Angola, or Namibia. It applies to the high seas outside national jurisdiction, limits of national jurisdiction. Next. Who then are the contracting parties to SIAFO? At the moment, we have got four coastal states being Angola, Namibia, South Africa, and the United Kingdom, and those that have ratified, the coastal states contracting parties that have ratified are shown in bold. So it's only South Africa of the coastal states that has not ratified SIAFO. Countries known to fish in the SIAFO area: Spain, Portugal, Russia, Cyprus, Mauritius, Iceland, USA, and so on. In that group, it's only the European Union and Norway that have ratified. The convention was adopted, Chairs, on 5 January 2001. South Africa signed the convention 11 April 2001, and the convention came into force 13 April 2003. That's why I was saying SIAFO does exist. It is in operation, other than the fact that there are countries, including ourselves, which have not ratified the agreement. What then are the key issues of the SIAFO convention? The convention calls for establishment of a commission. So a commission does exist. And what is the function of the commission? It, the commission manages the fisheries. It formulates and adopts conservation and management measures. And the commission functions via a secretariat and two principal committees. And these committees, first of all, the secretariat obviously performs any duties delegated to it by the commission, and the annual cost of running the commission at the present time is 200,000 per member. Scientific committee has a responsibility for compiling statistical data to ensure best scientific advice is available for the exploitation of the fish in the high. There's a second committee called the Compliance Committee. The function of the Compliance Committee is to establish appropriate compliance mechanisms for effective monitoring, control, surveillance, and enforcement of the rules of the Commission. Next. What then would be benefits for South Africa? We see the first one as there being a management regime beyond the EEZ. And I would like to pause here, Chair, and remind you of what happened a few years ago, where Spain went and fished just outside Canadian waters. And there were no regional fisheries organizations, RFMOs, at the time. And Spain was entitled to fish just outside the waters of Canada. Canada was, of course, incensed by this because the fish were found in the EEZ and seasonally getting out of the EEZ to feed. And Spain was nailing the animals as they were feeding, so there was nothing that is coming back into Canadian waters. And this caused a lot of, if you recall, in fact, the Canadian army did shoot at the vessel, even though the Spanish were not doing anything illegal. You may also recall South African vessels moving to fish just outside Australian waters, and there was again a big furore, and the vessels withdrew. But they were within their rights. Where there is no regional fisheries management organization, you can fish 1 kilometer from another nation's border. Probably not correct, but it is not illegal. So if you then have a regional fisheries management organization, or you've got a management regime that goes beyond the EEZ, you are in a better position to manage those resources, both those that are in the high seas and those that are in your water, because you have control of both stocks. You have control of the entire stock. which is why the second bullet says our management regime then takes an ecosystem approach. We manage the whole population instead of managing just a portion of the population that is in your water, as though, because that's artificial. We should, if we want to manage properly, manage the whole population. And in order to manage the whole population, you must be able to manage what is in your water as well as what is outside your water, if it's the same, it's the same issue. So we condemn, therefore, chairs, that using the regional fisheries management organization, we are able to manage, have a management regime that goes beyond the EEZ, and we have a holistic management regime because we manage the whole area in which the animals are found. Thirdly, then, we have got an opportunity to jointly negotiate quotas and also an opportunity to all interrogate scientific assessments. And again, just to emphasize, Chair, all this doesn't apply to the South African EEZ, Namibian EEZ, or Angolan EEZ. As far as Yafo is concerned, we're talking about high seas. Fourth, fifthly, if we were to increase the suite of animals that are used by the South African fishery, then we would be putting ourselves in a position for job creation and economic growth as far as the seafood industry is concerned. We think, Chairs, that the benefits for coastal states of this kind of management definitely outweigh the cost. Last then, Chair, we request a joint meeting of Portfolio Committee on Environmental Affairs and Tourism and Select Committee on Land and Environmental Affairs to support the ratification of the CFO Convention by Parliament of the Republic of South Africa.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. It certainly was a very comprehensive session, very fascinating. I would just like to ask what has stood in the way of us joining CIFA up to now? Why are we being so dilatory about it when clearly there are absolute benefits for South Africa? What are those obstacles? And I would also like to ask, if we do join, will there be, would it be an issue for us to implement a specific legislation that would apply to our being able to be a full member and be a member that in fact can implement what would it mean for us?
Presumably conventions like this require cooperation and trust building initiatives between those countries that are members of conventions, or conventions that could have the benefit of also bringing countries together, which is important in terms of regional cooperation. The specific question is one about other countries and two about us. Do you have any particular concerns about level of science, managerial ability of the other members of the particular convention, and if so, can you assist in any way? The second part of that, are you confident DDG or indeed your own scientific capabilities and managerial capabilities within marine and coastal management are able to cope with the rigors of intervention as well, affecting the health, the management already of approximately 25, 50 within our own waters at the moment, and the pressure that places on the management and scientific capabilities of your own branch.
And then all your benefits. How do you arrive at the true benefits that you create? As well as the benefits relating to a coastal state of wave cost. So the benefits outweigh the cost. So how do you arrive at that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my question to the department is in relation to the enforcement of this. Each department does the department have got the capacity to enforce this? But surely there's some costs involved, and who are the responsible for these costs? Because I'm just, if you look at Angola, Namibia, the other participants here, do they have got the capacity also to enforce this in the short and the medium term? And then what is very interesting to me, Chairperson, is the cultural space. They say it's Angola, Namibia, South Africa, and the UK. And is that because of the islands in there, or because they lost the World Cup?
Thank you,
how would I meet and do the math?
there's a huge Japan convention, what is going to happen? All those who are complying, who do it, who are complying, you know, who do it, what is going to happen? Other countries, who are watching and who are watching, develop this thing outside and take on the same opportunity that even undermine the community. What do you want to say?
Had already been passed and accepted by the international community, by the United Nations. So when it was being negotiated, the drug and stocks agreement was already there. In South Africa, we were somewhat lucky in that when we then wrote the Marine Living Resources Act, these conventions were already known. In fact, CIAFO is the first convention to have been concluded after agreement on the settling and fish stocks. What I'm saying, Chair, is that the Marine Living Resources Act is fully informed by these provisions. And I do not believe that there's any need to amend or write fresh legislation in order to deal with an RFM. Then, Honorable Morgan asked about trust building initiatives. The negotiations, as I indicated, they started in the 90s. And I think it is quite clear from the objectives of CIAFO that we didn't trust the other contracting parties, which is why our convention is quite clear about they are not getting anywhere near our EDC. So we didn't trust them. But having worked with them over a long period of time, negotiating the agreement, I think there is a good degree of trust. And we think the fact that the European Union has ratified, as well as Norway, does indicate some kind of trust or understanding between the coastal cities and those nations. We're concerned about Japan, which has not yet ratified. And they were concerned about us in CIAFO sectors, about us not having ratified. But we're concerned about Japan. We don't understand why they have not ratified, but they haven't. Concerns about science, it's a vast area. It's a vast area. And any science we do there would be a science that is slightly different from the science you do in your own waters. But the animals that are found in the high seas I mean, what I mean is hake in the high seas is similar to hake in our waters. So our scientists that handle hake in our own waters will handle the hake even in high seas. So we do not believe that that there's a need for additional resources to handle those animals. And I think as Honorable Morgan points out, I mean, we're dealing with about 22 or 23 within our waters, and in the high seas, we're dealing with far fewer animals. So I do think that our scientists, working together with scientists in Namibia, as well as now working with scientists from the European Union, as well as scientists from Norway, I think we can marshal adequate capacity to get a good understanding of the levels of animals there. Then there was the question of me referring both to the EEZ and the economic exclusion zone. I'm sorry about that. It's the same thing. Honourable member, the EEZ is just an abbreviation for the economic exclusion zone. And the benefits such as job creation that we see, what he's saying is that if you had 10 tons to catch in South African waters, and the limit being put by the fact that there's a limit on the amount of fish that any company can be given, you could therefore augment your own quotas that you have in your own waters with quotas that are outside the South African waters. So in that sense, instead of processing 10 tons of fish, you could process 15 tons of fish, and we have to assume that the additional fish allows you to create more jobs. Whether about the statement that the cost would be below the benefit. Number one, I would suggest that most of these deep water species are high value animals, which are sought after by the market. Orange giraffe, for an example, is one such animal. It fetches very, very, very high prices in the market. And if our fishing companies were to be able to catch it, we do believe it would provide them with more profits. As far as Namibia and Angola and ourselves are concerned in terms of enforcement capacity, I'm really going to be long-winded about this chair. The international regime for compliance is generally weak. When we agree on an agreement, the groups always try to run faster than us. So we first of all had the law of the sea. We then had the straddling fish law. They have tried to get away with it. But the FAO has been, in the last few years, devising some creative ways of enforcing compliance. For an example, one that we're working on now is what is called port-state control. In other words, if a vessel gets into Cape Town, the FAO has guidelines for us on what questions to ask, what to check, what to allow, and what not to allow.
as an example, Honorable Mukwena, none of the coastal countries would, on the basis of this convention, allow any vessel to get into their harbors and offload fish unless it was contracted to this. It was contracted to this agreement. We have, you would recall, Chair, been frustrated, especially with our fishery around Prince Edward Island, by the so-called flags of convenience, where we've had beneficiaries in the developed world flagging their vessels all over the country. In Panama was at some stage very notorious for that. Belize is another country notorious for that, and so on and so on. Why? Because the law of the sea only puts the responsibility on the flag state to control those vessels, which would never really work, just because the vessels and the flags don't catch fish. The vessels are deployed by human beings who are the beneficiaries. Unfortunately, we don't have that tightened up even now. Once that is proposed, you've got very, very big interest frustrating that. But we are pleased now that the World Bank has come to the party, and we now have vessels listed on the basis of beneficiaries by the World Bank. So each country can use this legislation to use a list that has been drawn up by the World Bank in conjunction with the Lloyd's of London. I think they use the insuring of the vessels to get to the actual beneficiaries. And I think, therefore, Honorable Mukwena, even though we're not there, I do think we will crack it in the next few years if we are able to lay our hands on the actual beneficiaries. Again, you're raising a very controversial one about the relationship between the Regional Fisheries Management Organization and the Assembly. There is a bit of gray there. Even though the Law of the Sea, the United Nations Convention Law of the Sea, and similarly the Straddling Stocks, what we have is at the FAO, we've got some countries arguing and trying hard to get the RFMOs to be independent of the Assembly. So it's an ongoing debate. I know the South Americans are totally opposed to the RFMOs being totally independent, and that we wouldn't be able to use the United Nations to do sanctions. So at the last Council on Fisheries meeting last year, it was agreed that all the RFMOs must now subject themselves to a performance review. And that next year, we will draw up guidelines on how that performance review should go. So all in all, we're trying to make sure that the RFMOs live by the spirit of the United Nations agreement.
Thank you, Chair. Very short one. I just wanted to find out, what are the consequences of not ratifying?
Chairperson, the Canadians were shooting while it was not illegal. Those were fishing at that particular spot. What were the consequences of shooting while it was not illegal? That's the question. South Africa concerned about Japan not having ratified, and Japan having concerned about South Africa not having ratified. So how do you do it so that at least the concerns are addressed? But it is imperative, really, to have the law of the sea to be there and to be abided by all countries so that there is no depletion of fish in the high sea, whatever.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I know the concern that this has taken so long to come to us to be ratified, but it is a good thing that it's come to us now. I'm just going through the details of this. I mean, the way that I kind of conceptually see this, it's almost like the EEZ is, in a sense, our kind of marine protected area, and then this is the buffer zone. And what happens in the buffer zone affects what goes on in the EEZ, I imagine, in terms of migratory stock. And it concerns me greatly that, I mean, other countries such as Japan, Spain, all of that, are able to fish in this zone, because obviously that has a huge effect on our stocks in the EEZ. I was just wondering if you knew, in terms of the scientific data at the moment, with regards to fisheries such as hake and that, what effect that is having at the moment. I mean, do we have comprehensive data on the effects of what's going on in this area in terms of our particular EEZs and in terms of those migratory stocks? Are we seeing a depletion? Are we seeing massive effects in terms of depletion of stocks over there? And if that is the case, because, I mean, this is a worldwide phenomenon, I mean, fish stocks globally are getting depleted. And I think that what we're seeing is northern countries coming down into areas which haven't been fully exploited as yet. And if that is the case, what kind of teeth does this convention give us to actually crack down on such states taking those stocks? Because I think this is crucial. I mean, we've even had instances where some of these states have moved into our EEZ. Now, this is a lot bigger area than our EEZ. How are we going to enforce this? What are the compliance mechanisms in terms of this? Do we have the capacity in the coastal space to actually enforce this and make sure that people aren't fishing out our stuff in that regard?
The olifant.
Chairperson, just want to get a clarity, particularly on the structure itself, this commission. You are saying it's going to be in two ways, the secretariat and two committees. Now, I just want to check whether the secretariat is going to be a permanent structure. If it's going to be a permanent structure, how is it going to be composed? Or how is it composed? Because my problem here is that this convention, you're saying, it came into force in 2003. The structure that we're talking about today, which you are saying we need to rectify so that it can be established. Now, I believe that if this convention came into force in 2003, there is a possibility that the very same structure was established. Now, how did South Africa participate while the convention was not ratified by Parliament? And secondly, the issue of the cost, following on the concerns that were raised by the previous speakers, Comrade Van Rooyen and Comrade Mugwen. I just want to check how much each country is contributing towards that particular cost. Because my worry is that if this structure is a permanent structure, at the end of the day, then you will find that the cost is going to be more than the 300,000. So how each country is contributing towards the cost? Thank you.
Thank you, Commander Olivant. Did you just think about the last question?
Thank you, Co-Chair. The first question was consequences of not ratifying. I see two. Chair, you will recall that we do work together with Namibia and Angola in what we call the Benguela Current Large Marine Ecosystem. And that working together is based on the fact that we are neighbors and that we have common interests and that we should strengthen each other, especially when we go to other forums outside the region. And therefore, I think there is a solidarity question when then the Angolans and the Namibians are left to have to deal with the other contracting parties on their own. I would say there is that kind of solidarity setback. But I would say, secondly, Chairs, that's a vast area, and we continue to discover and describe new animals. And if we were not members that have ratified, we could be prevented from fishing by the other country. So that's what we would lose, the ability to fish. Japan, I'm told by my colleague who did attend the CERPO meeting last week, has been given an ultimate term to ratify the convention. Otherwise, their vessels will be listed. But at the moment, there are no South African vessels that are fishing there. So consequences in terms of solidarity with our neighbors, and the second one is that you couldn't fish if you hadn't ratified. Co-chair, the consequences for Canada, I suspect none other than in terms of diplomatic things. People may have said that Canada is not illegal for these guys to fish there. But I think everybody in the world sympathizes with the Canadians because it is just mischievous to go and fish just outside another country. So I think it was not Canada only that has taken strong measures. As a matter of fact, Namibia has also taken very strong measures. That if you are stealing, do not expect that I'm going to treat you with kid gloves. So what I'm saying is, when you deal with a criminal, some people tend to sympathize with you, even if your actions are not totally legal, as in this case. So I do not believe, though, there were negative consequences for Canada. Japan, I think I've already dealt with the Japan question. Japan is fishing there. There's two vessels, and they have not ratified, and the CIAPO wants to do something about it. And I think they will. Fishing the Bafa honorable trading, yes. I cannot agree with you more that the value of these conventions are that you do not only manage what is in the high seas, but it enables you to manage better what is in your own waters. I like your example that, in fact, operates more like an MPA. And to the impact of catches outside EEZ, I imagine there would be, but I couldn't say we have quantified them now. There would be impacts. But I do not, there would be impacts and we have not quantified them. Let me not even try to guess. You are absolutely correct that some of the northern countries are now seeking new fishing grounds. So as the grounds in the northern hemisphere and elsewhere get depleted, and as the fish get depleted in the EEZ, Everybody is looking for something new, and that something new will be found in the high seas. I would remind honorable members that countries like Spain, Japan, and Portugal, by the way, they tend in their psychology to believe that they have freedom of the seas, that historically had freedom of the seas before a lot of many of these other countries, including the developing countries, before they took an interest in fishing. And how dare you tell us not to do what we've been doing for the past century? So there is that psychological problem that we tend to have with particularly those three distant water fishing nations. Whether the convention will have adequate teeth, I think the answer, Chair, is if the Regional Fisheries Management Organization has support. In other words, there are many people who have ratified it. Even the cost then goes down. I'm told that the cost at about 300,000 for Namibia and Angola at the moment is based on the number of countries that have ratified, and that if more countries were to ratify, that cost will go down. And our ability to do research, our ability to ensure compliance is of course proportional to the resources that we make available to the convention. Then there was the issue of the structure of the secretariat. The secretariat is appointed for a term of 4 years. And we have an executive secretary. How many other people are there? Three. So we've got an executive secretary, and he is assisted by three other people administratively. But the other work is done by the compliance committee and the scientific committee. Chair, I think I've covered all the
questions.
Ratifying would enable us to have representation on those committees as well. And I think that would also be an important factor for us to be able to both feed in and pull out the cross-cutting of information that's what is happening out there. I just wonder how would those committees work? Would they be appointed or would they be nominated? How does it happen?
The way, and Chair, I'm not 100% sure about this one in particular, but I will illustrate what the concept has been in the Benguela current large marine ecosystem. We have said each committee will have a representative from South Africa, from Angola, and from Namibia. So we always strive for representation of the coastal states. No doubt there would also be representation of the other contracting parties, in other words, contracting parties. But the law of the Straddling Stocks Agreement and CIAFO do have a bias towards developing countries, do have a bias towards coastal states. So there's no doubt in my mind that we would always call the shots in terms of composition of both the scientific committee as well as the compliance committee.
Well,
thank you to Mike and your team that almost concludes the deal of this part. Before we leave, I suppose the next step would be that we'll find the appropriate time for us to adopt the convention. And I think yourself and the, all the members will be informed about it. Thank you very much. Chairperson,
you are co-chair and joined by two people here, members who come from a province that doesn't have the sea. What do you think about your red
Maybe in another life, you will be born next to the sea. Let's hope so. Thank you very much.
Yeah, in fact, Chairperson, from the side of the Select Committee, if the members so wish, would love to ratify today, we do not have the leisure of time because we're dealing with many portfolios, unless if there's a difficulty from their side. But if they do propose that we ratify, we will be ratifying right away now. I'd love to have a proposer from the side of the Select Committee and a seconder. Honourable Member from Royan is proposing that we ratify. Do we have any seconder? From the side of the Select Committee, seconded by Honourable Masanyami. Anybody opposed? I think we will.
Convention of